Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's phone conference of Allianz SE on the publication of the business result in the second quarter of 2013. For your information, this conference will be taped. At this point, I would like to hand over to Christian Gross.
Thank you very much. Good morning and welcome also from my side to our phone conference for the half year results of Allianz Group. As usual, for the half year, first of all, Michael Diekmann will present you his statement on the half year, and then Dieter Bäumer will guide you through the detailed results of the second quarter.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gross. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's a fantastically beautiful day in Munich, Caribbean temperatures, and everyone's in great spirits because the vacations are coming up. The vacation time is coming up. Thank you very much for your interest in our half year results, and I would like to give you an overview in the following form. First of all, I'll talk about the business developments in the first half of the year. Then I'll report on current developments. Finally, I will give you an outlook for the fiscal year 2013 as a whole, and Dr. Bäumer will then explain the detailed figures for the second quarter to you. As you might remember, the first quarter of the year was highly positive for us because there were hardly any natural catastrophes, and this trend also continued in April and almost up to the end of May. It wasn't until the beginning of June when we had some impacts on our business that I'll be talking about in more detail. The erratic developments in the second quarter were also reflected in our share price. It had initially risen in this quarter from 160 euros at the end of March to 120 euros and closed at 112 euros at the end of June. Today, as of today, we've just crossed 120 euros again. With 7.1%, Allianz's share nevertheless grew and outperformed the insurance shares as a whole, which made advances of 5.9%. In contrast to this, the Euro Stoxx 50 lost 1.3% in the first half of the year. Despite the share price fluctuations in the first 6 months of the year, the relative performance of our share shows that Allianz is still on track in operational times, and it's also testament to just how resilient our business model is proving to be. Nevertheless, our solid development should not make us lose sight of the fact that the economic situation, especially in Europe, remains difficult. This is reflected, for example, in the development of revenues for our property and casualty business. That brings me to our key data for the first half of the year 2013 and the comparison to the previous year's figure. At nearly 59 billion euros, total revenues were up 6.5% year-on-year. Our operating profit climbed to 5.2 billion euros, that's a plus of 12.7%. Net income for the first half of the year rose by 25.3%, so we even outpaced the growth in our operating profit, and we came to a total of almost 3.3 billion euros. And of course, this helps us not only to continue to pay attractive dividends, but also to invest in organic growth and possible acquisitions. With a solvency ratio of 177%, Allianz continues to rank among the companies with the strongest capitalization in our sector. Let me now come first to our property and casualty insurance business. Our result here was shaped to a considerable degree by June floods in Central Europe. For the second time in just a few years, Austria, the Czech Republic, and the southern and eastern parts of Germany fell victim to what was called a flood of the century, with an estimated total of more than 10 billion euros. We have an economic loss in this. We see a huge economic loss from this. However, it's not just the extent of the flood, but rather also the large number of people affected by it that make this a unique major loss event. Benefits to our customers are expected to be more than 700 million euros according to our current estimates, and after reinsurance, the impact is around 330 million euros. We have done everything in our power to provide quick and uncomplicated help to those who were affected.
For this, we not only increased the number of claims experts, but also gave our agents greater leeway and authorization to settle claims. To date, we've recorded around 50,000 flood claims and have already settled 32,000 of them, and I would really like to thank all those who helped us in making this possible. Despite this major impact and some other less prominent weather events, our combined ratio improved by 1.6 percentage points to 95.1% in the first 6 months of the year. The operating profit for property and casualty rose by 11.9% and reached 2.5 billion euros. In our life insurance business, gross written premiums rose considerably in the first 6 months of the year by 9%. The main growth drivers here came from Italy, France, and the Asia-Pacific region. Our operating profit fell in the same period by 7.2% to 1.5 billion euros. That was largely due to a lower operating investment result. That brings me to asset management, and that was clearly in the focus over the last few weeks here. Especially the second half of the second quarter proved to be challenging for the entire industry. After the sudden increase in yields in the bond market in the second half of the quarter, we experienced outflows from the portfolios. But nevertheless, overall, also in the second quarter, we recorded net inflows of 7 billion euros. For the first half of the year, this figure amounts to 50 billion euros even. And with 1.7 billion euros, we also achieved an excellent operating profit, which is clearly indicated by a 43.4% increase in year-on-year comparison. And I'll talk more about the developments in PIMCO later on in my presentation. All in all, these results show that we are operating successfully in all business areas, even in the face of difficult overall market conditions, and that the biggest challenge continues to be the interest rate environment. This is not just true for the low overall environment, but also for the short-term volatilities. Now, following this overview of the results, I would now like to touch on a few milestones from the first half of the year. These occurred in three areas: operational improvements in core markets, organic growth, and acquisitions. These are my topics here. Let me just start with Fireman's Fund and Allianz Germany before taking a brief look at our subsidiaries in Southern Europe, because they, of course, are facing an extremely difficult market environment, and it's important not to just surrender to the negative situation in these markets. But let me first of all talk about Fireman's Fund. It will continue pursue the strategy of a provider of specialized insurance solutions under the leadership of Andrew Torrens, and our initial results are truly encouraging. Profitability in new business rose in the first half of the year thanks to strict cost discipline and an improved business mix. The combined ratio has also been improving continuously over the past 6 months and was most recently just over 100%. Another positive example for operational improvements is seen in Allianz Deutschland, or Germany. In the second quarter, we hosted the annual Allianz Capital Markets Day for the international analyst community, and this year it was dedicated to the Allianz business in Germany. The feedback on our positioning and the development in all three operating segments was very positive, even though the flood and subsequent hail events, of course, impacted the combined ratio of our property and casualty business. But I think everyone was able to see the large operational improvements we've made, and that these one-off events shouldn't detract from these improvements. At this point, it's important for me to address an issue that's been the focus of a lot of attention in recent weeks. I'm talking about the new pension insurance product offered by Allianz Deutschland, which is called Perspektive. Perspektive is a new pension insurance product, and during the accumulation phase, it offers customers higher chances of returns compared to traditional life insurance while guaranteeing the premiums paid in. Added to that, in the patient's pension payout phase, is a guaranteed lifetime pension calculated with the guaranteed interest rate applicable at the time. The public discussion of this new product has been mainly focused on the issue of the guaranteed interest rate, and from a customer point of view, this guaranteed rate is one of the important factors, but it is just one. And compared to other factors, it becomes less and less important the lower the guaranteed interest rate gets. So when our customers look ahead to their own retirements, they mainly want to know the total benefits they can receive. And even though we have an unusually long phase of low interest rates, it's nevertheless important to remind you that our life insurance products over the last years always paid out more than the guaranteed interest rate of 1.75%. However, being able to ensure this guaranteed interest rate costs customers part of their returns. Therefore, the new product forgoes the mandated guaranteed interest rate during the accumulation phase and instead offers a long-term return advantage over traditional pension insurance. With our Perspektive product for the year 2013, we are declaring an aggregate interest rate of 4.5%. That is 0.3 percentage points more than for traditional pension insurance. And this return is more than respectable given the current environment and compared to all other retirement investments. Depending on the period of the policy, disadvantage can thus add up over the years to a significant additional benefit, and for the average accumulation period of a policy of 30 years, this adds up to an increase in total capital of nearly 5%. Therefore, Perspektive, our new product, also offers far-reaching guarantees. The benefit paid out when the policy matures or in the event of death corresponds at the very least to the premiums paid in. And in addition, and this has frequently gone unnoticed on the reports on the product, this guaranteed sum in the accumulation phase is not static. Every single annually allocated profit participation remains permanently with the customer, which increases the guarantee for the entire residual term of the product. Thus, the guaranteed sum will only ever grow and never shrink. And under the current interest rate conditions, the question is also correct that customers are asking us, why should I commit myself now to the current low interest rate of 1.75% for my pension? This is why our Perspektive product offers the advantage that the pension calculation at the start of the pension payout phase will be based not on today's historically low guaranteed interest rate, but rather on the actuarial interest rate that applies at the time. So if the guaranteed interest rate at the beginning of the pension phase is higher than 1.75%, this will result in higher guaranteed pension payments. So to sum all this up, anyone who's confident about future economic developments can choose Perspektive as a product that allows them to participate in these future developments much more than with a current or a traditional pension product with a fixed guarantee sum. At the same time, these also enjoy a very high level of security because there's no risk of loss. Also, ladies and gentlemen, from a broader perspective, by introducing Perspektive, we are doing exactly what legislators and regulators expect of insurance. In order to protect taxpayers, legislators are calling for increased security to protect against all kinds of potential risks. And in the insurance sector, security means setting aside more risk capital, which in turn translates into higher costs for the customers. Thus, it's virtually impossible to cover all guarantee risks and also take capital market risks at the same time because it's simply too expensive for the customers. As a result, we strongly believe that the landscape for guaranteed products will split into two customer areas. On the one hand, we will continue to see traditional products offering lifelong guarantees. However, these products will offer relatively limited return opportunities because of the low-risk nature of the investments. And on the other hand, more and more new products will be coming on the market, still offering guarantees but to a lesser degree, or as we call it, in a split setup. In exchange, these products will have more investment options available to them and will therefore enable higher returns. And our Perspektive product is one of the first in this new group.
In addition to the two kinds of products with guarantees, of course, there will still be pension insurance products without guarantees, i.e. unit-linked pension insurance products. However, we expect that they will continue to play only a relatively minor role in Germany, even in the future, at least compared to other European countries. Now, as announced before, let me now take a look at some of our subsidiaries in the European periphery states. Allianz's business has also shown solid development in Southern Europe, despite difficult conditions on the whole. In the second quarter, our Italian subsidiary followed up on its extremely successful start to the year. The operating profit climbed by nearly 45% in the first half of 2013. The combined ratio fell by 9.4 percentage points. Earlier investments in IT systems, telematics and sales played a key role in the success. For example, since 2009, the number of telematics insurance policies, known as pay-as-you-drive policies, has risen from 6,000 to 160,000 units. In the direct business, for the first time, we surpassed the 1 million policy mark. In our life insurance segment, sales through our financial advisors and through our joint venture with UniCredit, Creditas, proved successful. And I'll talk about a special unit-linked insurance product in Italy in just a moment. The situation in Greece, however, remains challenging. Despite a drop in revenues in response to the severe recession, we've boosted the profitability of our P&C business. The Greek car insurance market is characterized by intense price pressure and is extremely competitive. Nevertheless, the number of vehicles insured by us rose by 15% in the first half of the year. In the same period in our life insurance business, we expanded our range of products, and we are the first insurance company on the Greek market to also offer unit-linked life insurance. Our Spanish and Portuguese subsidiaries also showed good development. In Spain, we expanded our customer base by about 5% despite a shrinking market. And in Portugal, amid ongoing difficult economic conditions, last year we were able to further increase, or compared to the previous year, we were able to further increase our profitability lead over our competitors. And in the first half of 2013, we also recorded a customer growth of 5.4%, thus continuing our good course from the last year. The next milestones I would like to mention relate to Allianz's organic growth in the first half of 2013. We are highly satisfied, of course, with our group growth of 6.5%. And Latin America remains a region that offers above-average growth for us. The population there is young and the middle class is getting bigger and bigger. As prosperity levels rise, people are also developing more of an interest in securing their positions. The emerging middle class is also starting to turn more attention to issues like healthcare and retirement provision. And the opportunities that have arisen as a result are reflected in our double-digit growth rates in the region. In order to provide our customers and agents in Latin America with the best possible level of support, we are currently rolling out our IT and business platform, which has already proved effective in Spain and Portugal. It has resulted in significant improvements in efficiency and growth in the Iberian Peninsula and will also help to further promote our business in Latin America. The platform has already been launched in Colombia, and after a test phase in the fourth quarter this year, the launch in Brazil is slated for the start of 2014, and Argentina and Mexico are currently under assessment regarding this introduction. Another way of achieving organic growth is to develop and successfully launch new and innovative products tailored to suit the specific needs of individual countries. In Italy, we're offering our customers a novel unit-linked product called Progetto Reddito. This comes in response to the request voiced by numerous customers who want to generate reliable, regular capital gains. With this product, investors invest a single premium in a fund of funds that's managed by us, and in return, they receive a payout for the income from the investment on a quarterly basis. In the space of only 6 months, we've generated revenue totaling nearly 700 million euros with this product.
A second product is in the agricultural insurance sector. We are currently developing a remote sensory technology that uses satellite-based radar data to monitor biomass growth. This technology will facilitate the widespread launch of crop insurance also in developing countries. The pilot project will be launched in 2014, and this is just one of many examples of how we are using technology to strengthen our core business, to tap into new business areas, and to make a key economic contribution at the same time. With our product Allianz Cyber Protect, we recently launched an insurance product on the market that protects companies from a whole variety of different IT risks. The Allianz Cyber Protect is the first and only cyber policy that covers both liability and property damages as well as service costs, and it also assumes the cost of data protection lawsuits. Following the launch of Allianz Cyber Protect in Germany, we'll be launching the product in Austria, Switzerland, the UK, France, Spain, Australia, and New Zealand before the year is over. As we all know, the trend towards digitalization and networking of completely different areas of our lives is continuing. Under the heading Connected Home, we're currently in the process of developing some initial ideas together with selected energy and telecommunications providers. One possibility would be a product concept in combination with home contents insurance or also assistance services. So, for example, customers could be informed by smartphone of water damage or a smoke alarm that's been set up, allowing them to immediately react to any damage. The initial test phases for individual product ideas are currently underway in Germany, France, and Switzerland. In addition to these products, we've also made significant progress in distribution in the first half of the year. For example, we stepped up our sales cooperation with the major bank HSBC. Following the agreements reached in the first quarter, which provide for the sale of Allianz products over HSBC campuses in Turkey and in Asia, we signed a further agreement in the second quarter. Under this agreement, Euler Hermes will act as the exclusive provider of credit insurance solutions for HSBC corporate customers worldwide. We have, moreover, concluded an exclusive 15-year sales agreement with Yapı Kredi, the fourth largest private bank in Turkey, giving us access to 6.5 million customers. Turkey is also a very good example of our complementary acquisition approach. We purchased Yapı Kredi's property and casualty business entirely and 80% of its life and pension business. The authorities have, in the meantime, given their approval, so from July onwards, we started the consolidation of our business with our company in Turkey. This transaction makes us the number one in one of the world's fastest growing insurance markets, a market that offers a robust economic outlook and boasts a large young population of 75 million people. Now that I've discussed these milestones in the first half of the year, I would like to turn to the main current industry issues that have influenced our environment over the past few months. I'll be talking about the status of the regulatory discussion. I will consider the restructuring of the European Monetary Union, and I'll talk about the monetary policy approach taken by the central banks in regards to the investment environment. I appreciate only too well that the regulatory framework for the insurance sector is a topic that the general public struggles to grasp, perhaps one that is equally difficult to assess as the question as to how Europe can find its way back to sustainable growth. These issues are, however, extremely important for our customers and us. Allianz, as you all know, supports the rapid implementation of the EU Directive on the Solvency of Insurance Companies, known as Solvency II. However, this is under the condition that it provides a solution for a long-term guarantee business. The current proposals from the European Insurance Regulatory Authority, EIOPA, and the Lithuanian-led Council Presidency go into the right direction, but they are not far-reaching enough. When it comes to new business, we can and will react flexibly to new regulatory requirements. But as far as our existing business is concerned, we believe that significant action needs to be taken. This is an area where the insurance sector needs a sufficiently long-term transitional solution. In my speech, I have some examples, and with Dr. Wemmer, we have the specialist for this topic with us, so that I won't go into the details here, but we're available for your questions to explain this and discuss this in more detail, should you be interested in that. Another regulatory element for us is the question of global system relevancy of individual financial institutions. We continue to believe that the classical insurance business is not system relevant, and therefore Allianz is best enough for this. But of course, we have to accept the different position of the financial regulatory boards on this, and we will now look for the measures and see what will happen in the coming months, and we will clarify all this in our discussions. And we're optimistic that we'll be able to find positive solutions, and we're also convinced that Allianz, on the capital side of its business mix and in with its risk management, is so well positioned that we fulfill all of the additional requirements resulting from the nomination even today. Another constant issue, of course, is the containment of the sovereign debt crisis in Europe. Many people are pushing this topic aside in the meantime, or don't want to hear about it any longer, but it's a fact that the longer the crisis continues, the more harmful it is to European unity. I'm absolutely convinced that if we want sustainable growth and common values in Europe in the long run, that we have to make monetary union a success and resolutely continue on the path we've embarked upon. For that, the persistent sovereign debts absolutely must be reduced. Lithuania and Ireland have led the way, shown how much progress can be made with a systematic focus on restructuring. On the other hand, countries also have to continue to forge ahead with necessary structural reforms, and a banking union, meaning a pan-European and not the national regulation of banks, would make an important contribution to that. However, without a common political understanding of how to move forward, and without harmonized rules within the single currency area, we'll never be able to find our way out of this debt maze. If the stability of the system as a whole is at risk, it has to be possible to take effective measures that also allow Europe to intervene in national fiscal and economic policy matters as well. However, in my view, it is not merely fiscal policy alone, but rather it's only by shaping European unity as a single European economic area that Europe's competitiveness can be strengthened. In this respect, the common energy and infrastructure policy seems particularly pertinent. At present, the focus, from my point of view, is too one-sided on debt policy and too little on the issue of growth, and that is cross-border growth that I'm talking about. As a result, the capital and financial markets are reacting very sensitively to any factors that could hinder the delicate outlook for growth. For example, market reactions have been determined increasingly by the actions taken by central banks or the statements made by currency guardians. The announcement made by the chairman of the U.S. Fed that the Fed planned to gradually retreat from the policy of cheap money triggered intense and excessive reactions on the bond markets. The 10-year U.S. government bonds recently had a yield between 2.5 and 2.6%, so 60 to 70 basis points higher than the average level for the first 5 months of the year. As the world's largest fixed income fund manager, PIMCO, of course, wasn't unaffected by that. It's, however, important not to overreact to temporary outflows. Dealing with fund inflows and outflows has always been part of the day-to-day business of asset managers. And please, ladies and gentlemen, with all the discussion about the outflows in June, let's not forget PIMCO currently has assets under management of 1.2 trillion euros and reported net inflows in the first half of the year of close to 45 billion euros. And even the difficult second quarter, PIMCO closed with net inflows of more than 4 billion euros. Furthermore, PIMCO has already proven its ability to successfully manage even extreme situations. Mr. Verma will explain this to you, and you will also see a chart in which we'll explain this in a visual presentation. Finally, I would like to provide you with our outlook for the rest of the year, and in this respect, I will, as in previous years, refer to our operating profit. After the first quarter, a few observers were calling for us to raise our outlook. But given the extreme factors that we talked about in the second quarter, we believe that the caution we opted to exercise back then was justified. In view of our good half-year results, we are maintaining our operating profit outlook for 2013 of 9.2 billion euros, plus or minus 500 million euros. Although, based on our current projections, we see the figure more toward the upper end of this range. As always, this forecast is under the caveat that natural catastrophes and capital market turbulence do not exceed expected levels. And thank you very much for your kind attention. And now Dr. Wimmer will guide you through the detailed results of the second quarter 2013.
Thank you very much, Mr. Diekmann, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to talk about the figures in detail. I hope you all had the occasion to look at the German and English text on our web page of these charts, and that you can see it in front of you, because I'm going to refer to that with the numbers of the pages. Starting with the presentation, the highlights in quarter 2 2013 were given by Mr. Diekmann already. In terms of figures, we'd like to state that the Nat Cat in total were 550 million euros, placed the burden on the second quarter, plus 45 million additional premiums that we're using and that we're paying for the reinsurers for coverage and for utilization. If I go to page 4, the group's performance, in the second quarter, like in the first one, our revenues went up by 6.5%, and also the net income went up one quarter, which compares with the first quarter very well. Operating profit is 5% up in the second quarter and strongly driven by an excellent result in P&C, a strong performance in asset management, and a solid result in life and health, totaling 2.4 billion euros operating profit. That is one of the stronger quarters, you can say. If you look at the capital position, towards year-end, our equity went down 5%, which is 2.5 billion euros, driven by three factors. First of all, due to the small interest increases in June, the unrealized gains in our fixed income positions went down, which is net for the equity 3.5 billion euros. 2 billion dividend was paid out, and also you would have to calculate that 3 billion of profits were made in this half year, and the difference is explained by exchange changes, which were quite strong in the second quarter. Still, we can look at a very strong solvency, the economic solvency, and also the classic solvency. We call it conglomerate solvency here by Solvency One. We're 4% down percentage points, but that's due to the fact that we could afford to have a so-called hybrid paper of $2 billion that we were canceling and not replacing it by a new paper, because our capital position currently feel is sufficient at the moment. If we look at P&C, the second quarter is weaker in than the first quarter, where we said 2 percentage points. But the key driver for this weakness basically is the changed participation in this crop, the crop insurance pool, and in the U.S. And you can particularly say, if you look at the line U.S., where the premium is -35%, and which proves this point, which if I take this out, all the other countries shows an adjusted growth of 2.3%, reflecting, I believe, not only the economic situation in Europe, but also this compares with our peers working in the same countries fighting for market shares. So we're in a good position and we can show growth in markets where others struggle. Particular growth carriers are Latin America, Turkey, but Mr. Diekmann mentioned this already, and our latest global line, our global activity, Allianz Worldwide Partners, with our business of assistance services and international health business, but also business with the international car manufacturers, were bundled and making it this new global growth story. Let's look at the P&C result on page 7. You see the underwriting result with the detailed development of the combined ratio, but also the changes of the individual components. The main carrier of this increase of profit was the technical result coming from underwriting, and what is left for the company, despite 5.5 percentage points inflow or influence of the Nat Cats, our combined ratio was improved with 96.0 percentage points. It's not as strong as in the first quarter any longer, but given the Nat Cat flood, that could have not been expected. So in the second quarter, this is the runoff ratio, stronger than in the first quarter. There are various factors that play a role. In the second quarter 2012, last year, we had reserves increases for the Thailand flood coming from the year 2011. That still had to be done back then. And also in the second quarter, we started to put reserves into an American subsidiary. And you know, this led to a major improvement and strengthening of the reserves in the third quarter. So we can look at a reduced result last year, and this year in particular, you would have to add that Italy shows a better claim management and has a beneficial contribution to the runoff ratio. And you can also look at the following page where you see this Italy on page 8. Italy has a combined ratio of 76%, which is great. And that's why it is intensively better than the peers, than someone, you know, that is offering, you know, someone that is customer friendly and profitable. The high combined ratio in Germany of 110%. Don't get shocked by that, because Germany was the center of the various Nat Cats, apart from the floods that have been mentioned already. We had storms and hail events even end of June, that attributed with 120 million in Germany. That means the influence of Nat Cat in Germany alone was 17 percentage point. And that means if we take this away from the 110, actually we would have a very comparable value of, like in the first quarter. That means the underlying business and the trends in Germany are still relevant and are still intact and okay. Numerous other countries have also contributed to this excellent result of the combined ratio, and also American business with 100% is absolutely on track with our development and expectations. Now let's have a short look at our investment of P&C. Nominal profits are 784 2004, they went down to a 784, but in the line underneath interest and similar income are basically on the previous year level, 40 million less. You know, in times of this low reinvestment interest, is still a very nice result. And having results in the net realizations is not due to any impairments of any instruments, no. But basically, this is due to the fact of negative FX exchange rates on and having an influence on the operating result. And that is what is happening, that we have to show in the investment results, in our accounting. That leads me to our business in life. Great growth in the second quarter. The first quarter showed already very good growth, but it even went further up, and that means the growth of the P&C was by far overcompensated. So 10% plus in life, driven by Germany, France, Italy, but also the emerging markets are coming in here, like Asia Pacific, makes a great contribution, and which is evidence that HSBC not only gives us new contracts, but these contracts also can be translated into growth and new business. In Asia Pacific, to give you a detail, Taiwan in the second quarter made 130% growth increase versus the previous year, which is strongly driven by the banking connections. That means the banking channel is the main carrier of this growth leap with 4 percentage points. This is the plus of the 10. And so the banking channel makes a great contribution. And banking channel means Italy, Germany, France, but not to forget Spain. The plus of 45% is very strongly coming from distribution. If you go to page 11 and have a second look at the operating performance of life business, you need to state that the 150 million euros reduction in the operating result at first glance might not look nice, but this is a consequence of our risk policy and risk management. As a life insurer providing guarantees, we especially need to focus on having long-term guarantees fulfilled, and that's why we can hedge them against declining interest. Hedging against declining interest means if interest might go up slightly, that some of the hedgings might go down in the value. And that's why in the investment result you can also see results coming from these interest hedging strategies, which are included in this figure, which, if we look at page 12, that they are basically related to the German operating profit, and they hit that German profit versus the previous year that went down 150 million euros roughly. In the US, like other American market participants, we've seen positive results from these hedging strategies, as this is typical for the VA business. Basically, this income is coming from increased amortizations of our deferred conclusion costs. That means the overall result did not show this any longer, but it was only seen in the cash flows in America. Apart from that, the total volumes or values of the most subsidiaries increased on a wide basis. And another statement I'd like to make about new business. Our new business margin, which is currently measured at actuarial 1.7%, has not changed versus the previous year. However, the new business value has increased particularly, and which is due to the large volume increases. In addition, what you see under risk aspects and that increase the attractiveness of the new business, we have an increased unit-linked insurance in Italy, for example, but also in Asia and also in France to some extent. So what about security for our customers and the investment margin? That is what you can see on page 13. And if I may steer you to the margin line, which is 0.2%, unchanged, and of course rounding off plays a role, I can tell you that last year this were 18 basis points that were behind, and this year this is back by 19 basis points. That means fulfillment of the guarantees and separating the interest result and sharing this with the customer and also the number of the shareholders in a very stable situation. Our next page relates to the MCV and the company value of the life insurance business. This has been stable over 6 months, and I don't want to stress this any further. What is much more interesting is the positive net flows in our asset management. Let's look at that development on page 15. You see all assets under management, but the most important part of them is third party. That is the dark green section. That is the most interesting element. So versus last year, we've seen an increase of 100 billion euros. And of course, you would have to look at the various points of time. If you look at 1.456 billion euros versus the 1st of January with 20 billion and plus, if you compare with 1st April, we are 60 billion in minus. And clearly, the assets which are valued by market values, they slightly reduced by the increase of interest in June, but still are at a very high level. In particular, if you look at this distribution between traditional products, the Global Return Fund being part of it, and the new product generation, then in the last 12 months, the 100 billion increase almost exclusively is attributable to the new product, whereas the old product with 500 billion euros stayed rather stable throughout the last 12 months. And this is also reflected in the long-term trend in page 16. PIMCO moved from a mid-sized asset manager to a true world market leader, you can say. And within these 10 years of development, interests have not always gone down linearly, but there were phases of increasing interest and phases of declining interest. And that is why the easy formula could be that any basis point movement in the 10-year bonds through PIMCO decides about up and down of PIMCO. Now, that's a conclusion that would be too fast, and I think PIMCO has made a scalable business with a very high revenues and a very professional long-term management, and that was established very successfully, and it's going to develop in the next years to come. And that leads me to operating results and revenues and asset management business with 1.8 billion of fees, where only 78 million were success related. There were performance fees only, which is always a smaller figure in the second quarter. Then revenues have developed very nicely, and growth quite impressive, both absolutely and relatively, because in this quarter we made a new record in fees income, which adds up to a record level in operating profit. And in page 18 you see 800 million operating profit for quarter two, which is a very strong result. So we had 900 in the first quarter, 200 million of which were performance fees. So that means if performance fees would be disconsidered, then we can see in the underlying results we still were making a new record, which is basically driven by a very good cost quota, and that is the cost-income ratio, where PIMCO is slightly above 51%, as you can see on this page, and still is the most successful asset manager worldwide, operate with the greatest operating profit. That leads me to the summary of the results. I'd like to look at the central segment, where the costs of the holding and other activities were summarized, which are not shown in the individual segments. So we have 274 million loss down there. But since we're talking about cost positions, these cost items lie within our range of the envisaged volume, and that's currently the result that we've expected anyway. Plus the 100 million decrease are driven by increased pension fund expenses based on IRS 19 items that we launched early this year and new investments in global IT systems. So from operating profit, how do we get to a net income that is shown on page 20? Increased operating profit plus a positive non-operating item driven by good realized gains, but a strong impairment increase, and the income for interest expenses have slightly come down, and this is successfully supported by new investments in spring. So we have a pre-tax result of 2 billion income before tax, and a slightly reduced income tax. Last year's income tax were driven by one-off effects. Then on page 21 is the upper end of the target range we see in reach, and Mr. Diekmann mentioned this already, and that's why I just may summarize. Total revenues increased by 6.3% roughly. Further operating profit grows 5.2%, and 26.8% increase of the net income with a strong capital position and balance sheet are evidence for a quite successful quarter two.
Okay, that brings us to our question and answer session. Thank you. If, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star or asterisk key on your phone, followed by the digit 1. Please ensure that the mute function in your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. So again, just to remind you, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will now pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal their questions. Our first question is by Michael Flemick of Börsenzeitung. Good morning, Mr. Diekmann. Good morning, Mr. Wemmer. Good morning, Mr. Gross. Three questions. First of all, on the forecast and on PIMCO and in the interest rate situation, your forecast. The burden by natural catastrophes in the first half of the year should have been at the budgeted level, but nevertheless, the result is above planning. So could you tell me which activities are going better than you had initially planned? Second question regarding PIMCO. In the second quarter, you could see that analysts time and again in their reports spoke about the inflows in PIMCO, and also the Allianz share price showed short-term effects. Now, volatility for Allianz is unfamiliar with, but usually that stems from external effects. debt crisis, interest rate situation and so. But my question, with the growing importance of asset management, does that also change something about the philosophy, if you wish, of Allianz that it stands for, because it's been seen as very stable in the past? And the third question regarding the interest rate environment, you had mentioned time and again that this is the major challenge for Allianz, especially the growing volatility, the ups and downs. So does the positioning of Allianz change? So are you hedging less against decreasing interest rates because you might be foreseeing a change in interest rates? These are my questions. Okay, good morning, Mr. Fleming. Regarding business development, we've seen positive development. And let me start with your important question on PIMCO. Well, one third of our result, as you know, stems from asset management, and this is mainly driven by PIMCO, of course. But we also positively see the large contribution by Allianz Global Investors, which should be underlined because PIMCO is always in the focus. And I mean, it's a larger unit, of course, but now, if we look at the reports in the media, this is oftentimes more based on the performance of the total return funds, because there's the monthly comparison, if you will, and the total return fund is, of course, very large. One making up approximately 20% of PIMCO, so a prominent part of PIMCO. And the philosophy that you were talking about, you said it brings volatility, or it might bring volatility into the business model of Allianz. Has anything changed in this regard? Well, our position is no, nothing has changed from our point of view. We've seen a astonishingly stable development of asset management, even if we sometimes have an up or down of 10 billion back and forth. But compared to the large pool of 1.2 trillion, that's just a figure, a relatively small figure. And I mean, we cannot assume that we will always have growing volumes, because of course there will be market changes, and that they are affected stronger to market changes. That's part of the business. That's true both for interest rate developments, but also for foreign exchange rate developments. And when we're talking about interest rate changes, then we're talking about sudden changes, especially erratic ones. And you have to be prepared to this with such a large pool. And you can best do this in you can best be prepared to moderate or foreseeable interest rate changes. And that is why in the past we always mentioned that we will also go into the direction of alternative products and investments to have more diversity in our portfolios, and also with PIMCO. And in the last, or in the previous quarters, we've seen quite a good development in this regard. So that, let me try to sum this up. The one side is focused on the total return fund. From our point of view, therefore, leads to having a little bit of a lopsided view, and this might also be due to us, Mr. Fleming, that we need to talk a little bit more, or report in a broader way about the PIMCO portfolio, and this is also something we should plan for the future. Now, will this change the investment behavior of Allianz? We're talking about hedging, interest rates. Well, that's one of the most difficult questions. As I that before, the low interest rate environment in itself forces us to use a highly sophisticated investment approach, and it gets even more complex through the fact that we're not just basing this on purely economic topics, but also have to take into account expected regulatory changes and also an accounting development that we shouldn't forget. An accounting development in which market changes get more and more in the focus, whereas we have a long-term approach where current market assessments should play a smaller role. And this is exactly the kind of the field that we're struggling with. Major investors, and the Allianz is amongst the major investors in the world, certainly. So if major investors should be used to the benefit of economic development, for example, I mentioned the economic development in Europe, then if you want to use these to the benefit, then we have to deal more with topics such as accounting and accounting in times of volatilities. I mean, Mr. Wemma just mentioned this in one or the other clause or referred to some points that there are additional volatilities through foreign exchange ratios. I mean, we're no longer an investor in a fund in Switzerland or in US dollars, but we go on more and more into emerging markets, and that of course leads to certain complexities, and sometimes they are correlated. I mean, if the Fed boss talks about the interest rate development, then this is often reflected to 100% in the emerging markets, and these are new developments in some part for Allianz, that we have a highly complex investment approach where we really need to take into account that quarterly changes that might stem from different areas shouldn't be overestimated, but we should more look at the stability over time. There's another aspect that helps us, and this is not only true for asset management, but also for our insurance business, that one of the best data for the result development is an inflow of assets on the insurance side as a whole, so that we can compensate some of our developments in insurance business through the development of our investment portfolio. Mr. Wemmer, would you like to add something? Yeah. Good morning, Mr. Fleming. Also from my side, last time, yes, you said as a compensation for decreased interest rates and P&C, we also need to take a look at the underwriting result, and I think we've done a better job than we had planned initially. Italy, for example, is, I believe, the outstanding example here, also in absolute terms. But the result is really driven also by all the other segments, so that we came up with better combined ratios, but also asset management in the first half year in has put a major contribution into our result, and these are the main drivers. And let me add here, Mr. Fleming, the non-operating items show that we've really addressed some topics quite well that were highly volatile in the future. Our private equity portfolio, for example, where we had major impairments in the last quarters, but now we have a really stable non-operating result. Thank you very much, Mr. Siegmann, Mr. Wemmer. Next question, please. Our next question by Gilda Freuter. Good morning. I have some questions on asset management. Here I'd be interested on the start of the third quarter. Some analysts are guessing that growth in this segment, even if it's doing so great so far, or has done so great so far, that it will weaken towards the end of the year. Maybe even outlook on this, then I'd be interested in which more products lead to can you get higher margins. And then the third question, if we look at the outflows of these fixed income funds, where have they gone? What are the investors interested in? And finally, a question to Mr. Diekmann, as the member of the supervisory board of Siemens, now that the CEO change has happened, how do you assess the situation? Has everything been good there, and what are your expectations to Mr. Kessler? Well, let me start with Siemens, even though usually I don't talk about mandates like that. I would like to congratulate Mr. Keyes on becoming his new job as the CEO, and as the supervisory board member, I up for all. I wish Siemens great success, because Siemens is a major contributor to the German economy, and with Mr. Keyes we have an excellent CEO, in my opinion. Okay, then I would like to answer the questions on asset management. Well, July we started with a small uptake in the assets under management. Following the current calculations, the margin has developed quite positively for some time, and talked about the rotation from a core to a non-core product, and they have slightly higher administration margins, and therefore also in the second quarter we have a higher average margin than in the first quarter, and I could imagine that this trend will continue. The question now, where do the funds go on the regarding this rotation? And I can give you the same answer that a well-known representative of the market leader in asset management gave. The fixed income monies are usually parked in cash, and a sector rotation from fixed income to shares or to equities cannot be seen. And also, another competitor saw the shift from core to non-core products in fixed income, so the two market leaders are quite comparable in their remarks and in their results, and that makes us optimistic for the future. Okay, so you're not seeing a weakening in asset management, is this correct? No, we're not seeing this. Okay, thank you. Next question, please. Our next question by Herbert Fromme of Süddeutsche Zeitung. Good morning. I have four questions. The first one, maybe I missed this, but how much reserve release was included in P&C, and was that significantly more than in the previous year's figures? Then I'd be interested by the expense ratio has grown over the first half of the year, especially in the United States, and with AGCS, what's behind that? And then you mentioned taking significant progress in the United States, Mr. Diekmann. So what has truly changed? What are you doing differently than last year? And the last question, I'm not entirely certain how the current status of the financial crisis hits Allianz, and if you can say that with your investment policy in Italy, France, and so on and so forth, you're out of any danger, or is this still a dangerous area for you, and how far are you invested in these areas? Good morning, Mr. Fromme. I'll start with a question. I think I stated clearly that the foreign debt crisis, or the sovereign debt crisis, is still a major issue, even though there is a certain degree of optimism right now. In Italy and France, we are still largely invested. In Italy, we reduced our investment to a certain degree, but this is not due to the fact that we don't believe in Italy. It's just that for risk reasons, we had to reduce the accumulation there. And the question as to whether we've seen any danger there is difficult to answer. I mean, last year we said, independent of the likelihood or of a crisis that could lead to a haircut, as we saw in Greece, and I don't want to say that we will have anything like this, anything of this nature anywhere else, but that our plan is that we remain as solvent, that even in such a case we don't need to take on any additional capital, and this is really something that we're checking on a daily basis, and I think this is the best positioning possible for us for a European insurer which is present with significant life insurance business in all these markets. Now, what we're doing differently in the United States? Well, we have a strong refocusing on what we can do best. And what we can do best is deal with higher value real estate and insure those wealthier customers, and to focus on strongly on topics that we're extremely strong in. So the commercial, corporate area, for example, in entertainment, whereas the other areas with which we try to broaden our portfolio have been reduced. And also when it comes to the durations of our liabilities, that is an important fact. We had a expansion in long-running liabilities. There were certain liability lines that we are trying to get out more and more. And that also answers the question in part why our cost ratios or expense ratios are increasing, because for long-term business, it's difficult to cope with the costs at the same time. We are on track with our cost approach or with dealing with these costs, but it's not possible to manage all that immediately. We've given up a large part of the crop business because we saw a major cluster, a major accumulation there, and crop business is a high cost business, or rather low cost business, and if you reduce this kind of coverage, then costs will go up first. But you have to see what we're coming from, and so a general control of the books or a general switch of the books is not that quick a process as in other areas where we have more of a short-term business. Now, that's why it takes a little longer in the United States. The expense ratio in the group, well, this was coined by some one-off effects. Here, what I've just mentioned is a topic, the question of the crop business in the United States. Then we have a second point, the real estate premiums for reinsurance are included in our cost ratio, and we have a third cost driver, which is the integration of our Eurocourtage business that enters at a higher distribution fee rate than the other French segments, and Mr. Vemma will give you more detail. Yeah, good morning, Mr. Fromme. With the expense ratio, you were asking for AGCS last year. In the second quarter, we had a major contract that was an ILS contract, and with a very low expense ratio. Now that this is gone, of course, the costs for AGCS have gone up comparatively. The runoff ratio, 5.7 percentage points for the second quarter, that compared to 2.1 percentage points in the previous year's quarter. And here I think I mentioned that last year, after reserves for the Thailand flood in the second quarter of 2012, we strengthened reserves for, and I know I also strengthened reserves for Fireman's Fund, and as we did not have any reserves increases in any areas, but just runoff results and a very positive contribution by Italy, by the way, and this is why the combined ratio in Italy, which was close to 80% before that, has now gone below 80%, and that includes 100 million runoff in the second quarter, above all from motor business, which is doing just great. And is there any way for you to control this? What do you mean by control? Well, that you have 5.7 instead of 2.1 in runoff results. Well, as I said, last year we had the additional bookings or the rebookings from the Thailand flood, and I don't think that we can control anything of that nature. Therefore, the figures are as they are. Italy, well, as we had a great combined ratio, or as we had a great in motor, we did very careful analysis before we booked this. That's why we weren't ready at the end of the first quarter and only include this or recognize this in the second quarter. Otherwise, it would have been the first quarter. Mr. Fromm, at the end, you're asking as to whether we are using the runoff ratio to shape our results. Well, in the runoff ratio, we have clear processes for this in our group, so no one can book any runoff without getting into contact with the reserve committees and the board of management, which to release any reserves, and all this is then also be checked by our auditors. So the management possibilities through runoff, even though the runoff helped us in this quarter, the design possibilities are small. Okay, Mr. Wiegmann, may I ask another question? If you were to explain to the normal citizen why Allianz is still doing so great in spite of the major losses from the flood, what would you tell those people? Well, because in the sense of the overall control of the group, we cut off, if you wish, certain major risks. So 300 million of deductible is not that small an amount, but that's part of our approach, that we say major results or major losses we don't want to carry alone. So this is also part of risk management, so we're trying to spread these risks so that we're not add any additional volatility of our business and confuse people with this. And Mr. Fromme, if I might add this, in the second quarter in Germany we had a loss. I have a combined ratio of 110%, which is simply due to these netcats and reflects them. So if without the natural catastrophes, our result would have been significantly better, because the results in other countries, of course, haven't been affected by that. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Mirko Weissart from Prato, please. Good morning. I have three questions. First of all, I'd like to know the share you think of, you could imagine that the new products in life insurance market could take. And in this respect also, where do you see differences in the industry between private insurers and insurance clubs? So that would be like one voice to the politics, or could this be separated much stronger in the future, presumably? Second question, AGI and PIMCO, both showing good results. PIMCO and might find itself in a more difficult situation in the next quarters to come, if you can say that anyway. Do you have any consideration that AGI and PIMCO might be stronger integrated? And is that something you don't look at, or is that something that might be taken out of the drawer again, to stronger integrate, to integrate these two more strongly? And so the financial situation of the group is very good, as you outlined, and the high dividend payment is also mentioned. What about stock repurchase? Do you ever think about that, and thinking of possible acquisitions, where would you see them? Because they're still to be waited for in a larger dimension. Thank you very much. I'd like to start at the end. Stock repurchase. Well, that's basically, if you don't have any other rent to do anything, and we're not talking about that. We talk about acquisitions. That's why there's no repurchase planned. For a few years, we consequently placing on complementary acquisitions in those countries where we do find ourselves in a good situation, where we do have assets that would fit into our strategy, you know. That means there's no large acquisition appetite at the moment because we do not see any countries. That's why we don't see any necessity to be stronger. Well, we have a comfortable capital position, so we can wait and see how things develop, so until they really fit. And I think the last acquisitions fully fit into this topic. Let's call them complementary acquisitions. Your second question as to whether there are any considerations to further reintegrate PIMCO and AGI, I can definitely say no, because at least I haven't heard of any considerations like that. The share of the new products, this is a very good question. Of course, we want this product to be very successful because we truly find this a very excellent product personally. Now, judging by the reactions coming from the press, we understood that it's obviously not so easy to understand because you have to spend time explaining various features and you have to double-check and see, is it too complex and that it can still be appropriately explained so that everyone is understanding it properly. And that's why we have to look at training and for distribution and also customer understanding. So we have to invest time and money into that. And so we shouldn't expect too much at the moment. But I think at the end of the day, you know, it's also a question of trust of into the product, because it helps customers taking confidence in the product. The product is one thing, but also with the product you buy part of the company. And customers in our distribution segments, with this underlying confidence that we are going to be as good as before on the cost and investment side, customers will be willing to deal with this topic in more detail, because you can't do this in a 10-minute sales talk. Well, the question is whether other companies might come in. Ergo came in with a slightly differently designed product on the market. That's difficult to say, and we can't really see, because first of all, you have to take effort to bring this product into the IT platform, and I do expect once this product type will be successful, others might come in and do this as well, but they will take some time because it's not that easy or trivial to provide the platform for that. I might have asked that question further to the industry, whether you see any difference between associations and private insurers, because associations focus more on the classic model. I've heard that, yeah. And I think this will have to stand the test of time and reality once the regulations of Solvency II have been finalized. Next question. Now a question from Ulrike Dauer from Dow Jones. Three journals. Good morning, gentlemen. I have three questions left. First question about Solvency II. You said something about transitory periods of how long and what for, because there are certain points of dispute between regulators and industry. Maybe the situation looks different. Further to the systemically relevant insurers, obviously, you're not too happy being part of that. But what do you think will be the new requirements with regard to capital? It's almost likely. It's not that concrete anyway. I would like to have another figure about tornado in Oklahoma in May. I didn't find any figure. What was your exposure? Probably there wasn't any. Just to have a figure, thank you. And then also the train accident in Spain. There was something written in the Pierce media. Probably you can specify the maximum exposure that might be. Thank you. Of course. Thank you, Ms. Dyer. Let me take over these questions. Let's start with Tornado Oklahoma. That was a region where we hardly made any business, and I think it's less than $1 million. That's why it didn't appear anywhere in any of the documents. The train accident in Spain, so the cross damage will be €10 million. coming from P&C, and after reinsurance, this figure will even be smaller. And your questions about Solvency II now. Well, we do support this request of the European industry to have long transitory periods, because ultimately our life insurance stocks have been developed over decades, and you can't have a system change within 24 months only because the regulator capital requirements have changed. That means transitory periods will be definitely very helpful for a number of companies, but these transitory periods do not mean, when it comes to new business, you would have 15 years' time to implement Solvency II. No. So when you look at the new business companies will be required to do this within the first year without the transitory business, period, to analyze and their business and show their business, and they are requested to show that their balance sheet is able to support that business in the long term they run. That's why Solvency II will become much more effective and much stronger much earlier in the new business, rather than suggested by this transitory period. There's a lot of companies within the industry that have probably not fully been analyzed, but this is going to be the big surprise once current proposals of Solvency II will have been adopted. Well, actually, you said the right thing about your system relevance point. Within the next few months, we are going to see the implications for us. Well, we've seen a few announcements, like 12 months. It will take another 12 months until all the rules will be set. So this is only speculation at the moment. I don't know more than you do. Just to probe on the cross damage in Spain, it's relatively small for yourself, Allianz. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I specified the figure for us, the overall claim. I have no insight into third-party payments. What about the rent funding? And you said that this grandfathering, this grandfathering is not being used. Solvency II and hybrid capital.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in terms of grandfathering, I'm sure there should be more flexibility, but it has to be provided, because that would be a strong break with the existing capital financing elements, because once these instruments cannot be used as equity any longer, that would definitely shake the trust. It might be nice for the capital market, but I think you can't expect this from the industry, and I'm actually quite assured that this will still come. So there's still more discussion needed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. Next question. Our next question comes from Heike Jahrberg from Tagesspiegel. Good morning, Mr. Diekmann. Good morning, Mr. Wemmer. I still have three questions. First of all, I'd like to relate to the acquisitions. Mr. Diekmann, you said that, well, once we are in a good position and when we have assets, my question is, Toll Collect, might that be one option? Would you ever be interested in Toll Collect together with Siemens? Second question, further to the system-relevant insurers, do you believe this is a competitive downside, being on that list, and would you reckon that your equity that has gone down would have to be increased? And the third question about the new product, Perspektive, would that also been implemented if the new law that were planned, like lower participation of the customers in the dormant reserves, would that also still be relevant if that law had been passed? Can you give me the second question again, please? System relevance, and whether you see this as a competitive downside and what this could mean for equity. Let me start with the second question, Mr. Wemmer, that we don't know what that means, because you hear people talking about capital surcharges, because We don't really know which capital would be concerned. And since our solvency, solvability is relatively high, our solvency is also expressed in the rating capital, I said we believe, under all considerations and circumstances, we should be able to fulfill this expectation. Whether that is prone to become a competitive edge, well, I think in perceptions of the customers, they would think everything is good, nothing could happen. The question whether we would have come out with a perspective product if we hadn't had this long discussions of Solvency II, that is a very, very interesting question, in fact. I think it's a combination of this intensive consideration and with the new risk management. Every company is obligated to do that. Every company has to show proof that any knowledge that they gain from the business might be translated into activity. So we are faced with a low interest environment, and this clear announcement of all central banks to have a high interest that this stays in the long term, in the long term scenario. This, together with the combination of risk management, this is a logical consequence of developing a product like that. I'm quite amazed that we haven't had this idea earlier, because we always thought that in this guarantee interest, because we simply couldn't imagine that you not only change part of this product, but in the general design. Actually, the solution we found, as well as simple it might seem with difficult problems, sometimes the more difficult the problem, the simpler the solution. I'm quite happy to see this product, because we're addressing a number of topics that definitely are relevant for customers and provide a benefit for them. I want to refrain from commenting towards Toll Collect, but we have a strong interest, for the reasons I've specified before, to invest into infrastructure projects. Whether Toll Collect is good or bad, I'm unable to assess this at the moment. That's why I would like to not make a comment here. But basically, infrastructure is extremely important, and also for economic reasons. Further to growth, we keep hearing the investment need is for infrastructure, and we do hope that everyone on the regulatory side and on the political side should understand the valuable pool these investments could be, and that's why people who will basically benefit through that, through life insurance, and that's a great model, and that's why they can be part of it. Ms. Jaberg, your question whether the perspective and valuation reserves are connected. No, I can't see any connections between these two topics. That was about that question. Thank you very much. Next question. Our next question from Banuta Sarek from Focus Online. Thank you.
Good morning. Three more questions on the new life insurance product. Mr. Diekmann, can you give the first statement as to how well this is received on the market, how many contracts have been closed so far? The second question then on Perspectivity product. You said you, of course, you're hoping for success, and what would this mean in the mid and long term ratio between classical life insurance and the new product? Is this supposed to replace traditional life insurance at some point? And the third question, in how far are your agents accessing existing customers, offering them new contracts in this regard? Thank you very much for the questions. Well, that we're trying to switch old contracts into new ones. That's basically what's behind your question. At this point in time, is not our focus. We're really trying to, first of all, create an understanding for our new product, and we're trying to intensively train, first of all, our salespeople, because this product is both new for them therefore we haven't had any major volumes of contracts that we've sold, a few thousand contracts so far. So compared to what we're usually selling, this is a minor element, and I mean, we've only had this product on the market for 30 days, so that's not astonishing at all. Will it replace the traditional life insurance at some point? Well, in my speech, I tried to make clear that it all depends on how you're seeing the future economic perspective. Certainly, there are people who say 1.75. It's better to have something instead of nothing, you know. And this is a question of mentality in the end. It's difficult to distinguish or to. But of course, we tested this product with potential customers, and if you give them the right explanation, then we found real interest in it. Otherwise, we wouldn't have brought it on the market anyway. So, you know. So, the question as to whether it will replace traditional life insurance, well, Mr. Wemmer just said it's the job of the regulation offices, and of legislation, as we have in the Solvency II discussions, that over the mid, over the long term, our new business should switch into this direction. Otherwise, we've led all these discussions in vain. Okay, let me add, and I think here the EU, ECB, and European Commission will have to consider to a certain degree as to how we want to control the development of financial markets in the future. All the banks are being forced to reduce their balance sheets. So the financing of the real economy needs to be more focused on the capital markets. And the EU, looking at the United States, mentions that the corporate bonds need to be doubled, so percentage-wise, to enable the direct financing of the real economy. But that, a prerequisite to that is that you have strong investors who are able to buy these titles. And the life insurance this industry is extremely well focused to purchase these bonds, but then in the equity requirements for the life insurance segments, you have to make sure, as the regulatory office and in the EU, you need to make sure for which areas you want to allocate these funds for. If you have the long-term guarantees, if you make them so expensive, then no more money is left for investment in the real economy. And with Perspectiva, we're trying to offer a new perspective within the current framework conditions, in that we're setting free capital from the guarantees and are taking on more investment risk on the other hand. And I believe that this could certainly a path also for Europe to continue to be available as a funds provided for the real economy, and I mean, this should be in all our interest to get the European economy moving again. Thank you. Next question, please. We'll come to Jonathan Gould from Reuters. Good morning. Three questions, rather, but not so long. First, I wanted to ask the British insurance regulators were talking about a lack of confidence into the internal models of insurers, and they also proposed an early warning system for insurers, which should be parallel to the systems that we have for the banks. So we have similar hints or remarks from the German regulatory offices that they don't trust the internal models that much, or how could this look and how could you react to this? A second question then, the German credit industry has quite a large exposure when it comes to municipal bonds in the United States. How about Allianz in this regard, and how do you see the further development in the United States following the bankruptcy of Detroit? And then last Sunday there was a major hail event in Baden-Württemberg. There are some of your peers were talking about $260 million in losses from this hailstorm. What about Allianz in this regard? Okay, I'll answer the first question, and then Mr. Wemmer will talk about exposure regarding municipals in the United States and also something about the hail event last weekend. So we are in a close cooperation with BaFin, the German regulatory authority, regarding our internal model. It's a extremely detailed work, so it's not something that's just built on trust, but everything, all the figures have been calculated, recalculated and tested, put on the stress scenarios, so that I have to say I think we're both learning from this process. It's a very intensive work and really affects the whole company and of course our risk management above all, and it's a steep learning curve for everyone involved. So I can't see any distrust or lack of trust in that, but it's not just in discussions with the regulatory authorities but also with rating agencies where we have checks of our internal models. Here we also have intensive discussions, and just quickly, S&P at least recognized or certified part of our internal model, leading to the fact that our rating outlook was switched from negative to our AA rating on the outlook was switched from negative to stable, and a AA rating for a European insurer is that was quite something we've seen as an award of excellence for ourselves, that shows the trust into our models once they have really gone in detail through those. Mr. Wemmer is still working on the other question, but now he's ready. Okay. Yeah. The UK authorities, if they changed their mind, might be due to the fact that they merged with the Bank of England, and so maybe they had some experience with structures in some areas that they now want to transfer to the insurance industry. Now, the German industry, we're invested with 5 billion in money. We are invested in municipal bonds and muni bonds with 5 billion, and we're analyzing just as all our other investments. And we can trust the analysis of PIMCO strongly, because for Detroit, for example, we have a gross exposure of 8 million, and net figures are even below this. Then the hail storm will affect us with approximately 200 million, according to first estimates, which is proof for the fact that we have a volatile result to a certain degree, and the weather effects over the year, therefore, for a German business, add up to 1 billion gross. And a major part of that in the flood, of course, was then reinsured. Okay, I would like to add here the 50,000 claims from the flood. That's a major event, but with the hailstorm here, we're talking about 80,000. Claim reports that have been filed so far, and we assume that the 80,000, there will be 40,000 claims due to damages in real estate and 40,000 for car claims. Okay, now that shows how much such a hailstorm on a Sunday evening or Sunday afternoon can do. Has this answered your question? Just one follow up. And the first topic with the British regulators, don't you fear that due to the complicated internal models that the regulators, not just in Great Britain but elsewhere, will want to develop a simpler solution or an early warning system in addition to all the other regulatory requirements that the insurers might be hit with, and could this be problematic? Well, with Solvency One, we have such a simple regulation, but I mean, it can't be the solution to come back to Solvency One, and also the return to the leverage ratio for the banks is not a solution, because these simple solutions, quote unquote, only create unlimited risk, because risk is not reflected there. And therefore, Basel 1, 2, 3 were created as an answer to these simple solutions. So a return to those, that this should be the right conclusion, I can't imagine, to be honest. Okay, thank you very much. Due to the tighter schedule, because we have also conferences or presentations from other companies, we will now come to the last question. At this point in time, we don't have any further questions. I would now like to hand back to Christian Gross for his final remarks. Okay, then we're glad that we've been able to answer all your questions. And here in Bavaria, where now the vacations are starting, we're wishing you all a great vacation time and not too much hail. Thank you very much. This, ladies and gentlemen, ends today's conference. We would like to thank you for your participation. Have a great day.